here, episode 6, Underground Espionage. Tara, how is it going?
It's much better now, thank you. I feel more present on this take. I'm gonna do.
You went somewhere. Where did you go?
We started for like 1 second,
and then Tara wasn't here, and so I was like, "Hey, we gotta start back over." Well, don't tell me, because if you go there, then you might go away.
I won't go there. Well, I just need to get it out of my head. In my head, I have Barbara Streisand from Funny Girl singing the Swan Lake song. Because I said, boy, is that good, and that's how she starts that song. So my head was doing the entire act and doing that song, and it was really awful.
Great movie, though.
It's a great movie. It's a great scene, one of my faves, but for some reason, I had to go, like, you know, when you start something, you had to kind of finish it. So I was momentarily distracted by the film in my head.
You went away.
I did go away, but I think that...
Did you go into the mirror?
Yes, because I think that also, you know, I was gearing up to discuss this, and I think that is a major part of the theme of this film, and it's why I like it. It's so heavily reliant on fantasy and wanting and all of those places that you can go internally, and I think that that is something that I am prone to.
This film being... Pandora's Mirror.
Yes, exactly.
That is our main feature for the day. Back in porn land, a couple episodes of non-porn. You know, we can't stay away from porn for too long.
And I think this has that something else by capturing the exploratory fantasies that people have. And so we'll discuss it and maybe dig into it and see how we feel about it. But overall, I have loved this film for lo these many years. Sonically, visually, the theme of it, it's one of my all-time favorites.
Absolutely. Well, Tara, did you have any news to share with me and the listeners? Did you have any anecdotes? Did you have any... Is there a cheese you've been into? Is there a wine you've been into that you could recommend? What are we having here? What are we having?
Oh, well, we're having like a little spritzer, so we can be really nice and get it started off. But we're having Esprit de Cépage, and it's a white wine blend. And I'm gonna be honest, I can't remember which grapes are in this off the top of my head, but I think it's nice and light because we've been having that. Beautiful spring. We're recording this on spring forward. We've been having lovely, warm, sunny weather. And it just kind of feels like bunnies and shit are hopping around. I've been eating my favorite Easter time treat, which is
Cadbury mini eggs.
Come
on.
You know what? I mean, I feel like everybody has this hot tip. We've been discussing it. We discussed it on Home Time on many occasions. The big gloopy mess of a Cadbury egg, no thank you. I'm good. Hard pass for me all the way. I don't want that gloop in the middle.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to bust it open. I don't want I don't like them. Gotta be honest.
Yeah.
I don't like them. However, like Cadbury cookie sticks are good, but I think the most superior of the springtime Cadbury treats is the Cadbury mini egg. You hold them in your hand and you smell a soft vanilla. They have that dissolving candy shell, which is far superior to M&M's because it's matte, so it kind of melts on your tongue. Then you get the vanilla and the milk chocolate together. They're great.
Look.
Not too sweet.
The greatest.
But pretty damn
it's
sweet.
It's definitely the thing around this time of year that we will indulge in.
Yeah, I don't get the big bag.
Did you get any more? Because we got no more here right now. They're gone. They're not around.
I'm really trying to like not overdo it. Look, and while we were watching Pandora's Mirror, I did get a delivery, and that is my annual bikini delivery where you gotta buy in the dip, Mike. I mean, do you know this?
I mean, I know
about
buying the dip.
Are you familiar with the theory of buying in the dip?
Okay, so
everybody. I do
know about buying the dip.
If you require swimwear.
Buy the dip, sell the rip.
Buy the dip, sell the rip. You got to get it in the wintertime when it's cheap. Something that might be very expensive is like a fraction of the cost. I would say bikinis that are usually $50 for each part of them I get for like $7 in the wintertime. Nobody wants last season's bikini, but you know what? I don't give a shit because I only, you know what I mean? So that after trying on all the bikinis after Pandora's Mirror, I realized I cannot eat unlimited Cadbury Mini.
Hey, look.
We're adults.
Look.
We have to ration.
Gray's been so good recently.
Everybody but me has been so good. You've been so good. I have not been good.
I've been okay.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say I've been...
You've been better than me.
I'm not going to pat myself on the back necessarily. Yeah. But I, you know, look.
We're fucking adults. We have
cares?
To do
we
shit
are.
Sometimes.
We
you know
are...
what I mean? Sometimes we have to like say, get the little bag of Cadbury Mini Eggs, one each, and then, you know, do that. Don't bring home the big bag. It's, you know, it's put your pistachios in a smaller bag and eat the smaller
look
bag
first. Look at
these
life lessons here. Oh,
the other news that I love is that the kid that got dropped off at the ER by a group of his friends that said that he collapsed playing basketball, but really they had hazed him in a warehouse and punched him in the chest until he died. What a horrible thing. And it's so undignified because there's like a very famous marching band called the Human Jukebox, which would not make me think that they're playing instruments. Like the Human Jukebox would make me think that they're playing like beatbox, like they're going like boom, like they're making mouth sounds. I won't do it. I almost did it.
I almost did it but I stopped.
But that would lead me to believe that, but that's not the case. They actually play instruments. It's a very famous thing. But the fraternity has a very undignified name too, and I just feel for his family involved, because it's just like all aspects of it are just so undignified. Oh man,
punched in the chest until he died. That's, I mean, look, hazing stuff always fascinated me. Anytime I would read about it, it was obviously I just never understood how anyone could be tempted to do some
to
sort
get
of fraternity
hazed, like,
hazing.
But we're not group people, like,
yeah.
I'm not like, yeah, I just don't want to be on a team or anything.
Yeah. Like I don't.
It's never been a thing I do.
Yeah, I've never understood like the appeal of being in something like that. But then, and then you were like, you read every few years, there's always like somebody who dies.
Oh, okay. I have the name of the fraternity. It's Omega Sci-Fi. And you're like sci-fi.
I mean, whatever.
Human jukebox, it, punched in the chest. Until,
but
like,
it's just like, it's such
so
a crazy.
Awful. Yeah.
Like, you know, when they drink themselves to death or like.
Get head wounds. Like
yeah.
Black
or, yeah. And then like die because.
Well, when do you want somebody who's your friend and beat the shit out of him? But I guess, you know what, we're saying this and then we go to shows where we all pound each other.
No,
at shows,
I mean,
but it's different, like,
yeah,
everybody,
yeah, yeah.
You kind of look out for people at, to
I mean
some
whatever
extent.
it's just not like it's a different thing. I won't
let you in until you let me punch you in the chest until you die,
and then you get to do this next year to somebody, so it's rad. Yeah, no, I mean, I've never understood that, but anytime I do, I will read about that kind of stuff, because I'm always like...
I'm interested.
Who the hell does this, you know?
Well, and then the thing that is, again, our interest in true crime and serial killers, like, you have this group of people who know that they just beat someone to death, right? And then how are they going to cover it up?
Right. Yeah,
how do they
yeah.
think they're not going to get found out?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, who are the people that go too far? Like, did somebody go really hard on them? Like, what is their thought process? Because it's like, are they like becoming like sociopaths in the way that like a switch is flipped for Ted Bundy?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, does that flip within them and they're just kind of latent, maniacal killers who finally see their opportunity? Like, did he like it? Did he like beating his friend to death?
Right. Do they get it? Was there a point of like, I mean, probably.
You know what I mean? Like, is it, do these things happen because a lot of people are potential killers and then they're given the opportunity
and
they become killers?
Wouldn't it be much more enticing if a hazing ritual to join a group was like,
go to the red light district together.
10 girls have to give you a blowjob. Oh my God. Like, how would that would be like, there? Like,
that's not a hazing.
Yeah, but why not?
The whole
not?
Point is you go through an ordeal.
Yeah, but boy, that'd be a
See,
great
the
ordeal.
The hazing would be for the girls to join the sorority, then they'd have to blow.
No,
10
that's
dudes.
Fun for them, and then fun for me.
Yeah.
But that would be so much more enticing.
Well, they're not trying to lure you in. The whole point is they're saying, like, you got to earn it.
Yeah, but, like, what if it was, what if it was like, you have to hold out for X amount of time? Like, and then...
That's not, that's like a...
I think that would be a much more pleasant hazing ritual.
I'm sure there's a place on OnlyFans for that, but it's not hazing, sir.
Well, it could be.
Not hazing.
Why can't it be?
You got to hold out for Zola.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Why couldn't it be? Why can't that be hazing?
Oh, wait, what is that? Oh.
Like, you have to, like...
You're just edge-lording. You're edging, not edge-lording. Edging. You're just, like, edging stuff. But that's a thing. That's a whole genre. Like,
yeah, but that's what I'm saying. To me, that's...
Hazing is not sexual.
Well, so you're saying
it's, like, physically abusive.
You're saying you support...
Psychologically abusive.
You'd rather... You're saying that my idea is not as good as punching someone to death?
You know what? I'm not trying to say good, bad here. I'm just giving you feedback, you know? I'm saying there's some opportunities.
I'm kind of shocked that you're,
if you're gonna go pitching, if you're going to go pitching this to your frat house,
I'm
then I just,
that you
I'm just trying
down.
To give you a little bit of feedback. And then you have to source the people providing the blowjobs.
I mean, you know, that's that can be
I see the more of the hazing thing would be the, like, no one knows who's, like, behind the glory hole. That would be more of a hazing thing, is you don't know what's behind the hole. It could be a mouth. It could be asshole. It could be something
you
gross.
You have to guess what it is.
It could be a Cadbury egg.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then that's more of a hazing thing. It could be a cactus.
Ow!
I'm just saying. If you want to stick your dick in the hole, you got to be willing to put some skin on the table.
My point is, why
can't game in the hole,
hazing
the skin in the hole
be enjoyable?
You definitively cannot be, sir.
I don't see why that's true.
Well, if you look up what hazing is, then you'll understand.
What, is there a definition?
Yeah, you want me to look it up?
Yes.
I'll do it.
Because why can't it be? Why can't it actually be
just get away from my...
like an extreme...
my Berkowitz tab
why
and my
can't it
Gacy
just be an
tab.
Extreme...
Look up hazing.
Pleasureful ordeal. Why does it have to be... why do you have to get punched in the chest?
It's an activity that humiliates, denigrates, degrades, endangers someone as a condition of joining or participating in a group.
Okay, it could, that could...
Hazing can happen in social and professional groups and can cause mental and physical harm.
It could be humiliating if you bust too early. So it could be humiliating.
Okay, so if you bust too early, then everybody laughs at you?
Yeah, that's fine.
And they point at you and they call you Mr. Too Soon Bust.
Yeah.
Or can't hold your nut.
Yeah.
Sir can't hold a nut.
But still, everyone had a good time.
Yeah, it's supposed to isolate you socially, though.
So.
So it's like definitively, right. You're looking for a good time, sir. And that is what I love about you. You're not looking for a hazing situation.
Hell no.
You don't have it in you. It's okay. That's why we're never good at those. Like, it's like I was never a brownie or a Girl Scout or a sport. It's not us. I'm not trying to hate on those people. I'm just not good at being in a group.
It's fine. I don't think anyone's listening who would be offended by that.
I'm really bad at it. As a matter of fact, I avoid it.
Well, I think that old Pandora had to go through some trials and tribulations throughout our feature film.
See, now this is more my speed.
Pandora's Mirror.
Like a reflective journey where one knows themselves more in depth, sexually, emotionally.
This is much more our speed. Well,
it's a journey of self-discovery.
It sure is. Pandora's Mirror, 1981, filmed in the late 70s or possibly early 80s. Sean Costello, who most famously directed Water Power, which still hasn't gotten... I'm still surprised that Mel Ucine or one of their labels has not done Water Power. I'm sure it's just... It's got to be someday, I would have to assume. It's got to be one of their most...
I'm surprised Gray hasn't done it.
I know. It's got to be one of their most requested titles. But yeah. Always went under some different names. I think his name here is something like Warren Evans or something like that. But it is Sean Costello. Veronica Hart. Our main lady, of course, was also one of our main ladies and roommates. So we've done a couple of Veronica Hart movies. And this is just one of those that kind of like Roommates, where everything about it's so compelling that you get sucked into this strange tale and the way it's shot, the music, and the entire atmosphere around Pandora's Mirror is just one of our favorites.
Again, it has supernatural elements, so you gotta love something pornographic that brings in the supernatural. Big fan. And Veronica Hart really showcases her acting ability, because she did do stage acting and much like we discussed last time, was trying to be straight actress, actress.
Yeah, and then she
had opportunities, and then at some point she had to make a decision and she chose pornographic actress, which thank goodness she did, because she's great at it, and she can showcase her other talent, which is not only acting, but it's conveying things with her body and mouth.
Yeah, and she said she just was like, it's way more fun. You know, this is way better. It's way more honest. It's way more upfront. And, you know, she would continue. You know, she stopped. She did more, you know, quote unquote straight movies, but really like direct to video. You know, she worked with Chuck Vincent a lot after he stopped doing porn. But then she did do porn again, a lot of non-sex roles. Like she'd maybe be a cameo in a porn or producer, or director, or something like that. But she's been one of those people that's always been like thumbs up on it. You know what I mean?
And this role, she takes it very seriously. And I think that her performance brings the entire movie together. Because this is much like we're saying Pandora's Mirror. Her name is Pandora. So again, that thin reference, right? Not involved, but essentially there is a mirror that exists in a secondhand shop in New York, and that mirror was handed down through generations, and it was crafted from wood from a tree that was struck by lightning, so it had magical properties. And the magical properties that it has aren't necessarily outlined in the film. You just kind of have to see them and feel them and understand what's going on throughout them. So we can discuss what we think the magical properties are, Mike, as we go through it.
I'd love to.
Because Pandora, you know, is opening the box of all the evil in the world, right? And all the trouble and the strife. So this mirror isn't necessarily opening the box of evil in the world, but it's certainly something that is engulfing her spiritually.
It definitely is. Well, I love just the absolute beginning title screen with the blue over the tree, the leaves, and the music's great. The music's great in this entire movie. You may or may not
recognize some of
it being used in someone's certain project, but hey, a little Easter egg.
Well, I was gonna say that eroticism is a big fan of this film.
There you go.
And I think that watching this really captures a lot of the things that I wanted to do with eroticism, and that is bringing in that aspect of like of the psychological.
Absolutely,
right? Because like certain sounds, experiences that it are more of like a gut feeling. This opening is fantastic because we start with two women walking down the street in New York, and just two sexy women of the 80s, right? Wearing those like silk dresses with a pattern, and then one of them has like that sheer white polka dot dress. It's not even sheer, just the light shining through so you can see like the shape of her legs and you can see the outline of her bush, and like, and they're just like having a dirty conversation
about what, Tara? It's so great.
Olivia Newton-John's cunt.
It's so great.
Says Olivia Newton-John's cunt so many times.
It's so great. It's so funny.
It's really, really amazing. So one of them is trying to tell the story about how she found out that her gynecologist is also Olivia Newton-John's gynecologist, and she's mad that her friend Pandora is not interested in her story because she is like, don't you want to know exactly what it's like? And
I just keep saying, I want to know what Olivia Newton-John's cunt is like.
I know. I want to know what it... But she does say something. She's like, oh, it's fine. or something. You know what I mean? Like when they keep like ramping up this conversation, when they get to the end, she's like, that's fine. But I was just thinking in this film while making notes, I'm like, what a wonderful premise of a movie is that a gal steps off the street into a random antique shop due to her irritation and her friend's unsatisfying tale of Olivia Newton-John's gynecologist. And then she finds an enchanted mirror. That is this tale.
That is how it goes.
It's how you write a film. Plot some. We have plot. We have a film here. That is also what's happening.
Yeah.
So we are introduced to the mirror again because she wants to escape her friend. And we meet the friend again later who, like, I get her irritation at her friend because at first I'm like, why do you not want to hear this story? Like, I would want to hear this story. But after getting to know her friend and watching her friend with Jamie Gillis, her friend's a shitty friend.
Well, we will get to that.
So I say, like, I don't mind her in retrospect being irritated at her friend's story and trying to get out of her friend's tale by finding this seductive
mirror.
Well,
we will see what happens with her friend. But here in the shop, we meet Frederick Foster, who plays a character in all the vignettes throughout the ages that are depicted through this mirror. And he has that great hammy, like 70s, early 80s trash exploitation movie actor.
Classic, like, reminded sleazy, me almost of, kind of, like, unattractive. Like, in the 20s, he would have been W.C. Fields.
But also, even just the way he actually acts almost reminded me of the killer in The Redeemer, that sort of overacting, probably was in theater.
Yes.
He non-sexual. He doesn't have sex in any of the scenes. Mm-mm. He's just actually an actor in it. And I believe he was in some more of Sean Costello's movies.
He's an actor.
But he gives that strange quality and, again, clearly spray-painted hair to look old. And all the scenes in the shop were filmed in one day. It was a 14-hour day. And because they had the location. This film was actually shot over the course of a couple weeks. It was a $100,000 budget. But, you know, they found this shop and you know, able basically rent it out for a day. So it was pretty much exactly what the shop was, except for obviously putting the mirror in there. And yeah, so all these scenes.
Well, it
in
says
the
it has ice cream and like cards.
Couldn't
and
find
greeting
it.
Cards, but I never saw ice cream or greeting cards.
But immediately he is hesitant to show Pandora the mirror because he knows the power that it holds.
He said, "The time you spend must be limited. There is danger."
There sure
and
is.
And so then immediately we're like, what in the heck could this danger be? So he takes the, and he's very clear, you can't keep the mirror, you have to keep the mirror covered. You can't just leave the mirror uncovered because it draws in.
It basically feeds off the.
Well, no, but
it's a two-way, it's a two-way mirror in a way, right?
I wrote down what he said, but it draws you into things. We go far, far back in time to a more of the revolutionary era.
Colonial times, George Washington times, the revolutionary.
The original, because we have some redcoats around. But we have the original ancestor of the shop owner who has made the mirror out of the tree that was downed by lightning. And now he rides away and his wife is saying to herself in the mirror, "Oh, my breasts long for a man to touch them. They warned me when I married a man so old. Why doesn't he want to be with me anymore?
And this woman, played by Tiffany Clark, does a fantastic job in the scene. But she's longing for some sexual attention. Tara,
and she's,
will she get it?
She's stripping down to her pantaloons. She is wearing one of those wonderful, like, white bonnet caps with a little red bow, and they match her little red bow and her pantaloons and her chunky little revolutionary shoes. So, as she wishes for a man, she gets three.
She got more than she wished for.
And one blasts in her hair.
And one blasts across
her fair cheek.
Yeah.
As the elegant music of strings and harps roll as they roll in the hay. And another further blast across her fair arse.
Yes, it's pretty great. And yeah, the music is great in each scene. It you know, it fits the time period. But yes, I do love the way the music is. And yeah, the scene's great. The one guy is so funny. He looks like he's just like chewing on her the entire time.
Oh, okay. So there is a theme in Pandora's Mirror. I'm just like, I'm guessing the director loved biting. Because like, he is chewing on her. And there are other scenes of just kind of chomping down on each other, you know, like really showing the teeth. And he like is like really getting the teeth down in the muff diving portion of the scene.
yes,
would
exactly.
be if you're wondering. And then there, another one, there's some nipple chewing and the later disco scene. But yeah, there's a lot of chewing, but I'm not mad at it.
Yeah, no, I like it.
But
yeah.
I think it's effective. And I think that it is a time just like when we're watching Franco. And I was always like, why is Lena licking people? What, their kissing scenes are so weird. And then I'm like, he must be directing them to kiss each other like they were performing cunnilingus. You know, the direction must be like, use your mouth in a way that evokes other things. And I think that's probably what was happening. I feel like they were directed to do this.
I mean, I think, I love, you know, it, these though. Scenes are, he said the sex scenes would take a while to do because there is a lot of cuts.
Yeah.
And there's a lot going on in them.
Yeah, there's four people and a lot of hay.
Yeah, but then in some other scenes, there's multiple things going on in the room, like, you know, in the theater scene, especially coming up. But, you know, there is a strangeness to the way it's all edited together, and Sean Costello edited this himself. But it adds to that phantasmagorical quality mm-hmm. that this is through some sort of mirror.
Yes, so we're drawn to the first ancestor of the mirror, and Pandora just kind of comes out of a daze.
Oh,
and
I love the way
home.
It looks when it's showing her up close, look, gazing at the mirror, then the light goes on her face. It looks amazing.
It's shot so well. And what a perfect time for makeup, the makeup that I crave. Just a bold swath of blush across the, like, I just want everything to have blush. I want blush. Like I remember, like, when I first, like, was allowed to wear makeup, and I would put blush on and be like, I don't ever want to stop. I just want to cover my entire face with blush. I want the whole thing to be blush. People do that now. We have seen it on the internet, on the things. But, well, I have. I don't know how many makeup kids everybody watches. But, oh, what a glorious time. So her beautiful eyes are just lit by the mirror, and she looks gorgeous. And then Pandora has to go home from the shop. She wants to buy the mirror, but it's not for sale because clearly it's dangerous. He covers it up and he says, that's too much. That's actually too much. You need to go home. You can't see any more mirror today. So what does she do, Mike? She goes home and takes a call from her boyfriend.
Okay,
who...
so wait. No, wait. Hang tight. Because as we were discussing, did we forget, or does the scene where she's watching the weightlifters happen... No, because
it's before
we forgot.
No, I think it's when she goes home.
She goes home at first and then comes back.
Well, no, that's what I was just about to tell.
But I thought
she goes home.
Right?
She's gazing out of her
window.
We might have
gotten it slightly out of order. I'm just saying that right now. You might be like, we didn't get it out of order, but I might say we might have gotten this a little bit out of order. Because I thought, doesn't she go into the...
Well, let me just...
Because I like this scene.
It can be either one. I know we can discuss it right now. We can discuss it right now. Like, so she sees it's not prior to this scene, sir, because
okay, fair enough.
Because she's the friend, Olivia Newton-John's cunt, which I'm interested in that because yeah. I love Olivia Newton-John. I think she's gorgeous. I think she has the voice of an angel. I think Xanadu is another like piece of just masterful cinema. And I would love to hear more, see more, know more about Olivia Newton-John's cunt. Now,
Sandra Hillman is the friend, by the way.
Sandra Hillman. So then they step into the shop. She says this, sees the scene. Then she has to go home. She's at home by the shopkeeper, right?
Yes.
Then she watches some brawny lads working out on a rooftop, building the muscles in a cutoff top, in some short shorts, you know, like... Longing, looking at these beefcakes working out on the next rooftop, thinking, I want these meatballs to come, I don't know,
to come.
Plow me a new meatball.
Yeah, and she has a foreshadowing fantasy of getting double teamed by him.
Yeah, and so she's like, ooh, what would that be like? So already, like, she's starting to, like, think about things in a new sexual way, right? She's being aroused. However... She's interrupted by a call from her boyfriend, Jamie Gillis, who is, you know, saying, hey, babe, what's up? You want to meet up? And she's like, maybe not tonight.
Yeah, man, come on. I love his, like, his low talking. It's like so, just like,
hey, what are you doing? Oh, my God.
It's
great.
So good.
So Jamie Gillis is just like, I'm not going to waste.
By the way, I think we've said I shouldn't have let him piss on you like every single day multiple times since the roommate episode.
Oh my God.
Shouldn't have let him do that to you.
Anything like we spill a little bit of something on the table, shouldn't have let him do that to you. Shouldn't let him piss on you like that. But so she says no to Jamie Gillis and he's like, oh, I'm not going to wait around forever. And she's cool with it because you know what? She needs to go see the mirror again. So she goes, she's like, if I go to bed right now, I can wake up really early, wait for that shop to open and go see the mirror.
See that mirror. I need that mirror.
Just what she does.
Tara, where do we get sent to on our second trip through
my
the mirror?
My favorite place. Oh my God. It's like this. I want this to be 10 films.
The star of this segment is Marlene Willoughby. And
I love her.
She is incredible. So we go back to 1940.
Roosevelt wins on the headline.
And actress.
If I start having actress voice, I apologize, but I can't help
myself. So we're on an actress's estate, and it is Marlene, and she's amazing. So she, according to Sean Costello, she designed and made all her dresses, brought everything, all her stuff.
Thank God.
And
yes.
She's just great.
I believe every moment
of it. The
glasses.
And she's just this totally, she fits this great 40s actress.
Over the top starlet.
Yeah, obsessed with herself when she's gifted the mirror and she's like, oh, it's got my favorite person in it. Me. You know, and she is just absolutely incredible this entire scene.
Oh, and she is a Hollywood starlet, but she's always getting in trouble and her manager's having a real hard time because he can't hide her lurid affairs that she's constantly having.
And her manager being the shopkeeper is who he plays in this
and
scene.
I love it when she has her houseboy, pool boy, and she's like, ooh, you red hot Latin hue. Oh, yeah. Carlos.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's so good. I'm just, what a joy. So this gal has an absolute appetite. She just had a recent scandal where they were trying to keep it out of the papers and they were like, you were with a boy who was 15. She was like, he was 17 and he had a cock like a mule.
It's so good.
And then of course the shopkeeper's relative was like, Veronica, you are single-handedly devouring California. Like, okay, so like immediate instant love.
Yeah.
And so she has such an appetite that she has to order out. She Grubhubs her next
basically
sexual
and she,
partner.
And as she says,
my
she does,
sex partner.
She doesn't just like men.
She likes everything. And see, this is what we're exploring with the mirror, right? So like Pandora's watching and she's like, what are the different ways I can think about this? What are the different ways I can explore my sexuality? Here's another woman who is unafraid, unabashed, uncovers the mirror, and immediately her next partner is delivered, and that's Miss Nancy Olson.
Played by Lacey Smith, according to the credits, but I believe she also had a different name. Some of the times a lot of porn stars would have multiple names in credits.
Makes sense.
For whatever reason. But
because the name in the credit
Smith
is
here.
Never their real name anyway.
Exactly. So sometimes
well,
it's even not the porn name. So it's sometimes can be confusing.
So many. Well, it's great. And you know what? A little confusion is fine. Or no confusion necessary. It's all okay. But Miss Nancy Olson is the new makeup girl. She is wearing a beautiful buttoned up powder blue dress, which I adore, and a baby blue beret. And if you ever get worried for a moment that she will take it off, worry no further, because she will not take it off. Bad boy stays on the whole
time. The hat stays
time.
On.
The hats don't take it off. Don't take it off.
Don't take it off.
So, and then they proceed to, I would say seduce, but they just completely, like, our starlet is just going to direct
the proceedings.
What is deflowering? Well, that's the word I was looking. Deflowering of the new makeup girl and have her houseboy Carlos and then her other like alleged fiance do things with her.
But also she also do things to her because this scene is when she's sitting on the diving board with the parasol and the green dress.
Oh yes.
And so she's like when she comes in she's like, you know, oil me up with this, and then she oils her up and just then proceeds to start licking our Marlene girl's asshole.
Yeah, fantastic. and it's a whole scene, and it's great. It's on a diving board, which I love the fact, like, it's some, also, like, the precarious nature of the diving board, because all four of them are going at it all over the diving board, and you think at some point somebody's going to fall in, right? No.
You know what? Skilled. Man, skilled.
I want a diving board to hang out on in ridiculous outfits. I love that I wrote this. The most relatable character ever. I love her so much.
I was gonna
my internal monologue is this Hollywood side. Like, if like in Office Space when he's hypnotized to be his authentic self, that's who I would turn into. Mike, I don't know if that person needs to rear her head in this world, so we better keep the mirror covered for the time being, if you know what I mean. But man, Ragtime is playing.
Yeah, it's so great.
One of the dudes is a total goon.
He's amazing. He's so funny. Dave Ruby and Sean Costello said he was one of his favorite guys to work with because he was so hilarious. And like in real life and on screen, like he's like, he was always so funny. He was always great.
He's like, Peter, you're my favorite heavy breather.
Yeah. It's really, he's great in it. Yeah.
Ah, man, it's so good. Let me see here. Okay, I'm on to a different scene, but I guess all I have to say about this scene is it's fantastic. It's full of fun. I love that we're going over like period pieces.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah.
No hatred for it. Dripping with charm, but also great traditional lovemaking.
For
beautiful people making love and fornicating with each other. There's lots of biting in this. So then we go from that scene. Jamie Gillis calls Pandora again.
Uh-oh.
Hey, you want to do something? And she was like, maybe next time. And so then he hangs up the phone and her bitchy little friend is like, see, I told you. And Jamie Gillis is just wearing a robe and she's like already fondling him. So she's like, see, I told you. Pandora's got something else going on. And so we see what a villainous character she is. We see what a two-faced bitch she is. But at the same time, we get to see Jamie Gillis in action doing something that he's really good at, and that's being a sleazebag with a sleazy lady.
Hey, she really puts the work in here and does a fantastic job. Now, Sean Costello had a great anecdote about how he found her. This is her first movie. She wasn't in many. But basically, one of his friends was like, oh, you got to see this chick. She really wants to be in movies. And she was actually living with Veronica Hart at the time.
She was very eager.
She was living with Veronica Hart at the time. So his buddy and him proceeded to have an all-night three-way with her. And she showed her skills quite well. And she was in. But then she actually really wasn't in too much more. She was in this and then a few more things. But yeah, you could say she's an eager beaver.
I said she was an eager beaver in my notes, too. And she even says, like, while she's, like, blowing Jamie Gillis, she's like, I bet it's never like that with Pandora, which is, like, I bet Pandora doesn't do this. Like,
just manhandling her, too.
No, and it's great. I mean, that's what's cool about Jamie Gillis is, like, his manliness, like, he's pawing at her and just really the way that he's, like, grabbing her body with his meaty hands. Like, no, I mean, I get why he's everyone's favorite. I mean, his performances are really, I don't even know, like, the word believable. They're, like, engaging.
Well, yeah, and primal.
And primal, but they don't seem, like, abusive. Like, sometimes his performances do seem that way.
Yeah.
But this isn't necessarily that way. Yeah. It's just incredibly manly. He's very high T.
Yeah, no, it's great. Scene. And I do like at the end when she's like, I want you to do something that Pandora would never let you do.
Come all over my face.
Which is actually, according to Pandora's premonition fantasy, not true.
Pandora gets come on her face all the time. Apparently there's a lot of coming in the hair in these
you gotta have that aim, but sometimes it just sometimes you just gotta let it fly.
But depending on the hair, it's not easy to get out.
Is it one of the more annoying things to
get out of your hair? Yeah. Yes, it doesn't come out. To get Because if you get cum out of your hair, you can't get it wet. Because once you get it wet, it gets clumpy.
Yeah.
So if you try to wash cum out of your hair, or if you don't know you have cum in your hair and you hop in a shower, it makes it worse. And it will not come out of your hair. And you have to, like, brush the cum out of your hair. Yeah. So you have to get it out dry and then kind of, like, conditioner it out. Yeah. I'm just saying that's big why. Deal. Like, again, sure, big deal. Big deal. You got to comb it out of your hair. I'm just saying, if you got stuff to do, you don't really need people coming in your hair because it's going to set you back an hour where right. you got to deal with that.
Right.
Especially
right.
not if you want to, like,
these ladies.
If you're like, if you want to go out somewhere and look respectable without having to, like,
think about how it would have been in colonial times for our colonial.
That's why they
girl.
Wore those bonnets. They yeah. couldn't get the cum out of their hair. Right. They had all those bonnets on all the time because they're just like up there, just like a stiff mess. You know what I mean? It's not even stiff. It's like little clumps. It's not right. Well, it's okay. It's fine. I'm sure somebody has a fetish for it. And maybe that's what they like about it. See, I could see that. Again, just like Pandora's mirror, you open up. It's like
you never know
it's like
what,
that thing
yeah.
where you're like, okay, explain it to me. Like, why do you like this? It's like fetishes with people. Like, what do you like about it? And they're like, well, I like when the cum gets really clumpy in the hair, and then I can look at it, and then I can think about
go.
Cum. And then you're like, okay, well, I get it. Now I understand why you like it. I like the rubber suit because you can see the skin, but it's weird rubber, so it looks fit. Like, you know what I mean? Like, actually, rubber, you don't even have to explain. Everybody knows why rubber is hot. But I'm just saying, like, sometimes, much like Pandora's mirror, it's like maybe you don't realize you were lacking in imagination in an area, and you just need something to get you beyond.
Philosophical words from Tara. Thank you.
Well, I mean, I think that I'm kind of like reading my notes. Like, she comes back again. So every other scene is like Pandora going back to the mirror. So she comes back again and she's like, can I look at it again? And he's like, well, it's, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
Now
he
said,
yeah.
And he said, you've already gone beyond careful, far yeah. beyond. And, like, I love, so this is where I think when I first watched this, I remember being like, oh, this is a special movie because that's when you start getting into, like, the Pandora aspect or, like, the deeper meaning or just the, I don't know, like, if you're, let's use it like a 90s term, like, if you're, like, a freak in any way, like, this film will appeal to you, right? Because when he's like, you've already gone far beyond careful. And then Veronica Hart, I just think about the actress and I'm like, she probably related to this. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
Like, especially like the idea of going beyond careful and the idea of getting in deep. Because like thinking about her being an actress and at some point she loved sex and she liked doing the things that were in these films. And she had to make that decision as to whether or not she wanted to play it safe or if she was willing to sacrifice her other career to explore herself sexually to even see if she could do this. You know what I mean? So I think that part, and I think that's why her performance is so good, because it feels like she's going through all of these motions.
Absolutely.
And then we get to maybe a scene that also Veronica Hart relates to, and that is Bonnie LeMay. And she'll do anything to be in a Barbara Mellon production.
Do we
get the
will.
Angel face Candy Barber? Who has a prettier face than Candy Barber? I can't name someone.
Very few people. She is absolutely gorgeous with the strangest nipples in pornography. She is amazing, though. We found her in Neon Nights, a movie we'll certainly be covering on Underground Espionage. She's the cover girl for that. She is truly, truly one of the hottest porn stars of the era.
Oh my God. Like, her, she has like such a sweet, angelic face. She is so hot. Her nipples are alarming. Alarming.
Yeah. Yeah. So heads up.
Heads up. But at the same time, like, it's that thing where we're in Pandora's mirror and I'm like, yeah, I could get into that. You know what I mean? Like, it's fine.
So Bonnie is played by Heather Gordon and Barbara Mellon played by Celeste Bond, who really didn't go on to do too much after this. Candy Barber did do a lot before and after this. Like I said, we'll definitely be covering Neon Nights and other movies.
Oh, yeah. Bonnie LeMay, the actress who would do anything to get into the production. Yes. And so then she's
great.
gets a
she that, would do anything.
And that's Tara, a weird dildo.
Anything.
That dildo that they, okay, so she's at an the whole premise is she's at an audition and Barbara Mellon is like a scumbag lady director who just is in it for the babes. And although she has a production, and her production is in production, she just can't get over the casting couch. She needs more casting couch. And she does have Candy Barber as her lady toy, but she wants more. She can't get enough.
She sure does. So we have Ron Hudd, who is the star of the scene in Roommates that we loved so much with Kelly Nichols, mm-hmm. the crazy, drugged out sex scene in Roommates.
And then, like, but the crazy thing is, like, the Bonnie LeMay, her hair dye is so bad. She has platinum bleached hair, and it's at that time where people didn't really condition well. Like, it's real fried. But you see at her bush that she is a natural blonde, and it's very blonde. It's impressively blonde.
It is. It's.
I'm sorry. I'm like a reporter. Nice. This is the Bush Report.
It's fantastic. I mean, these by movies, me. Yeah. It. You know. It's.
You
it's
got. I mean, we're talking about porn. I mean, that's part of it. I mean, that's like, you know.
But yeah, no. This scene's great. We have two sex scenes going on mm-hmm. in the same room. And again, this is where, you know, Sean Castle said, you know, this does take time, and you do have to stage things in such a way and in order to get it
especially done. If you have like a limited camera budget and you have so if you need a two camera shot for all sex scenes and then you have two simultaneous then you have a three camera then you have a four camera shot on
I think
I
only had one
and then they all exactly
yeah exact yes exa- yes
that's
yes,
my
yes.
point
got you
you're I, just your budget just went up exponentially right yeah
you know absolutely but yeah no this is a great one and there's some really great shots in here.
And the music.
Oh yeah,
like, it's insane. Like it's wild, but it's just like it's like one long guitar
well,
solo.
Well, it almost starts like almost like Dead Can Dance acoustic, and then it turns into like prog rock
and
solo.
It's
the
totally
strangest music.
Finger picked. Like yeah. It is an insane song. I think that eroticism may have tried to use it, but maybe it didn't work so much for eroticism.
Yeah,
it's a little too prog. Maybe eroticism should try a progged theme space fucking experiment. I don't know. But yeah. So then immediately we're jerked out of the scene because the mirror has a soul of its own and has its own needs and you can't let it see too much. That's what he says to her. The mirror has its own needs and the shopkeeper knows the dangers of this mirror. And this is where I was like, you know, this whole thing, like the mirror having the needs of its own and a soul of its own. I wanted to kind of like nail down in my head what I thought about the metaphor we had going on, right? Because it's not opening evil because no one's portrayed as doing anything evil, you know, like in, what is it? Blonde Death, where she says, just good, clean fucking. You know what I mean? Like, you don't get the feeling that the actors are victims. You don't get none of them are portraying themselves as victims. Everybody's, like, doing what they want to do willingly and exploring themselves and having a good time, right? Good, clean
Absolutely.
Fucking. So, you know, I think that the Pandora's Mirror is not necessarily some evil thing, but it's more like a metaphor of desire.
A metaphor
of desire. So like you can get like overcome with your desire and your fantasy and then you don't understand where you ended up. You know, it's like that Alice in Wonderland thing. Like if you're only acting on impulse, and I think that's where, you know, he's trying to convey to Pandora that it's starting to get dangerous for her. Because if you're just giving into impulse all the time and you're not questioning it and you're not tempering all of these roads and avenues you're going down, then you're going to look up one day and not recognize where you are. And I think that that's, you know, I've when people are filled with regret at things that they did, like I guess I've done things in this arena that could be construed as regrettable, but at the same time, like I find it hard to regret because I think that's part of it is doing something where in the cold light of day, you're like, why the fuck did I do that?
Yeah, getting in over your head.
Yeah.
You know, it's great.
And it's like, but understanding that you're getting it out of your head. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
being
a
willing participant and understanding what you're doing and being conscious of it.
Yeah.
And understanding that you're willing to sacrifice a little of your rationale in order to have that experience as to what it's like to, like, look into the void, or what it's like to do something that you never thought you would do.
Well, our final vignette here really looks into the void and gets everyone in over their head as it heads to the Hellfire Club.
And, you know, and we have the ultimate temptation of letting you engage in your desires, and that's Annie Sprinkle.
So she does take the mirror home, and for our final scene, we are actually in the real Hellfire Club that did exist, and this was, in fact, the set that was made for the movie Cruising.
Oh,
and after it was made, it was kept that way, and it actually became a club for two or three years. And so this is actually that club in the Meatpacking District.
Hell yeah.
And the Hellfire Club, Sean Costello said, is his literal favorite place on Earth.
I want to go to the Hellfire
and
Club.
And all these, and Annie Sprinkle, Jamie Gillis, all these people were there all the time.
Yeah.
And so this is a real glimpse into, and like all the other people.
All those people, that'd be hard to keep up.
All the people there, you know, are, were just actual patrons of the Hellfire Club, and then including, one, Miss Annie Sprinkle, who is just incredible in this
scene. Is magnificent, and I love her tiara. Mike, do you remember Wayne Clay Rendering played in that Swingers Club in Kentucky?
In Kentucky, yes.
That
was
really, really fun.
It wasn't active on our night of the show, but
It was a show that night. And there was no mistake in what it was in the manager, owner, I don't know what he was, and that also no mistaking. And there were some regulars that were there that may not have been expecting that show that night. But I think they were pleased to have new people in their den and their lair. It felt more like a lair. That's kind of what the Hellfire Club, and it's essentially the ancestor of the mirror owner. I guess he couldn't have been too much of an ancestor, like in 5 years.
Well, you look, you know, like maybe
tales.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, you know.
And he's taking his lady, his old lady, out for a nice night in the town. And he loves being cucked. He loves it. He wants to watch. He likes to watch. I get why you like to watch.
Not
Who doesn't like to watch?
Not relatable.
I like to watch. I know.
Being cucked,
I like the way we're talking right now. It makes it seem like we're like, I'm like, yes, Mike and I go to swingers clubs.
Yeah,
we do all of these things.
Yeah,
like
no.
I like no. No, but I'm not judging people who do.
Yeah, of course.
The
yeah.
thing is, like, I can understand why somebody would want to.
I mean, I can't relate to someone who'd want to be cucked,
to take his lady out and watch a bunch of people fuck her.
Yeah, but yeah. I can enjoy a movie depicting it.
No, well, I think he likes it because he feels that she's with him and that she's the object of everyone's desire. And if he can't be the object of everyone's desire in the same way, because he's not willing to let himself do that, that he wants to see everybody loving her. And then at the end of the day, he's like got some like pull, like, but she's with me. So then he feels like proud in a way. I think that's kind of the thing.
I mean,
being,
now look, like
with that situation, I think that's like a pride thing where you're like,
I mean, maybe
it's a selfish.
Maybe if Annie Sprinkle wanted to do that, I'd be proud.
Yeah,
you know,
well,
I'd
there
be a
you go.
More proud.
I mean, different. Well, of course, nobody thinks that you would say no to me and Annie Sprinkle getting it on in the Hellfire Club. Everybody knows that, Mike. We're all clear.
It was a great. This is a great final scene. Just a great orgy.
But
with...
the great thing about the orgy of the shots, like you, this is a film. Like you see it and. And so you have her on her throne, and she looks beautiful. And then you have the new lady who's introduced, and they're all like, let's deflower. He's like, don't say no to anybody. So then we – and again, now that you say that, and I didn't realize it was from Cruisin', they did have that kind of, like, crucifix.
Yeah.
You know, where
yeah.
people could go, and that's where she ends up. And you have this guy in these, like, full mirror aviators, and they're doing the shot.
Ron Hudd from the theater scene. Yeah.
So you see – the whole shot, like disco lights and everything else going on through his glasses. And I don't know. You can just tell that lighting was thought of, film was thought of, using the aviators as a prop. Like, it's really, really great. And I love this scene and its ultimate depravity, debauchery. It's everything that you would want in a New York sex club.
It's so great. Yeah, it's
people such a, pushing it to their limits.
It's such a great, well, almost final scene, because there is a final section of this movie where we are now in Pandora's apartment in her bedroom with the mirror, and she's still fantasizing about those weightlifters, and oh, what do you know, they magically appear in her bedroom, and we get the scene that she foreshadowed.
I know, she pulls the cover off again, and it's like, Pandora, you have to keep it covered, and she's like, I don't want to anymore.
But Tara, what happens now? We get this intense sex scene.
She gives into her fantasy. Pandora is just living out her dream of these two muscle-bound beefcakes, cheesecakes. She does get cum on her face.
She sure does. And I love actually how it looks when she's going into the mirror and her face is all like covered and she's like all sloppy and she's like going into the mirror because it's calling her.
Yeah, at the end, she says, Pandora. The guys are there and they're like, Pandora, Pandora. And then everybody's like, we knew you'd come. And welcome home, Pandora. So now she gets to go live in the mirror. And
she's
then
in the mirror.
And then the boys are left in her apartment holding her G-string.
Pandora, we knew you'd come.
Gave in. She got the thrill, and then she gave in. And now she's in her new home. So she gets to live in the mirror now. So,
fantastic.
So there you have it. I mean, I guess that's dangerous if you think that she gave up her life. But I like to think she's like just going to
all
these places.
She's forever. Yeah, she's forever in it now. I think she made the right decision.
I think that she's better off in the mirror than with her friend who likes to jerk off her boyfriend and mock her on the phone openly and can't tell a good story even though she has fantastic content.
I agree. Well, Pandora's Mirror, we love it. One of our all-time favorites of the 70s and 80s porn cinema, and glad we, it was a fun talk, glad to revisit it and enjoyed discussing it with you, Tara, and for you, the listeners.
I was just thinking of Groucho Marx saying that he hates a dirty joke unless it's told by someone who knows how to tell it.
I agree. Well, obviously we're going to be doing so much.
And this, they know how to tell.
They do. Obviously we're going to be doing so many porn films from this era throughout the podcast. We actually don't have one picked next week. You know, someone actually hit me up saying, you know, it'd be great if you always said what you're doing the next week. So, and I agree. You know what? You're not wrong.
But
sometimes we don't have the next week's episode planned when we record. So, apologies for that, but sometimes we do put up little cryptic teasers.
I mean, we could just flat out say it and on like Instagram.
Well, yeah, sometimes I put up cryptic teasers, stuff like that.
Well, maybe we can be less cryptic. Maybe that was the request. We'd be less cryptic.
We will try to plan out, and when we do get a chance to do that and we do have it planned out, we will let you know or figure out some way to let you know. But I still think that a lot of these movies that we cover can be listened to without having seen them and then go watch them. I personally love listening to podcasts about things I haven't seen and then go watching the movie and then listening to the podcast again.
Because so many times you need like a base coat.
I do all the time.
I mean, we do that.
So we'll be back next week with something. Don't know what. Maybe we'll give you a hint. Maybe we won't. We will see. But thank you for listening. And we'll be back next week. Talk to you then.